You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. One of Us is a podcast and video network funded all but entirely by donations and subscriptions. We do accept pitches for audio-based or banner ads, but on a case-by-case basis. If you're interested in that, contact us at oneofusnet@gmail.com. With the amount of audio and video content we generate, it is expensive and extremely time-consuming to keep things running. Please go to the webpage oneofus.net and sign up for a subscription at $2, $5, $10, or $25 and get a ton of bonus content. One of Us needs and appreciates all your support. This movie review also comes for subscribers at Time Lord level or above, an uncut, unedited, longer video version of the review. Become a subscriber and check it out.
You know, just like the three men at the core of this movie, here are the young men. We just got three little fuckers ready to cause some shit and take no names. So I am Davey Peppers, and with me is Brad.
Spliff.
And Robert.
Hey.
And we are here to review Here Are the Young Men, an Irish drama written and directed by Eoin Macken, starring Dean Charles Chapman, who you probably saw in 1917, Finn Cole, Anya Taylor-Joy, and Ferdia Walsh-Palow. So, this is based on the novel of the same name by Rob Doyle, and Chapman stars as Matt, a recent high school graduate who's just a fucker. And his two friends are just even worse fuckers. Anya Taylor-Joy and Matt, they have kind of a will-they-won't-they thing going on. And they're ready to go into the summer and have a grand old time. And then the three boys see a young girl get hit by a car and murdered. And the movie follows the three of them not dealing with and then being forced to deal with the trauma and post-traumatic stress disorder of seeing such a horrible thing. So with a movie that immediately and really quickly tackles such a serious and thoughtful subject matter, what did we all think of this movie that was just filled with nuance and empathy and didn't want to resort to cheap ploys, like having a character be a fucking rapist in the hour mark? I might have played my hand a little bit there.
Well, I personally enjoyed how the scene where this child is struck by a car, terrible, and it comes out of nowhere, much like this generation of kids. In a post 9/11 world, they're surrounded by violence 24/7 and they can't get away from it. I've read this book. I don't know if that message rings true in this film at all, but it was supposed to be a point in the movie.
Yeah, we get a little taste of leaving the narrative for this. I don't know quite how to pin it. We're going to like a game show. I'd say pretty apt representation of America in the moment of the film, where we're getting a theater where crowd reaction is maybe what we'll talk about, how people are perceiving us or the pressures that we put on ourselves to fit in, or they're getting feedback in these cut scenes. It kind of reminded me a little bit of maybe Requiem for a Dream, a little bit where we've got two things going on and they're connected, but they're also kind of playing and different ways. It's not, you know, just a metaphorical look at the other bit. I did like that. I think a little bit to what we might have got at the beginning is there's a little bit of on the noseness. I think that I would have really rather that we got more of the Rez character in the film, because I think you could have almost pushed this. I haven't read the book like Bradley has, but there was a certain point in the film where I thought that Matthew's character was kind of the in-between from the two extremes of how his friend handled it. while all three are destructively going through, trying to deal with the trauma. One is straight up taking it out on other people, and one has taken it out on himself as far as removing himself out of all relationships and stuff like that. But what I really missed out of that is the Matt character, to me, at least in the film, doesn't come up as that great a guy. The first time we see him, he's being told your decisions are everything. And then when the teacher tells him that a couple minutes later in the parking garage, he's like, cool, give me the bat. Like, it's not that I didn't want to see him redeemed. It's just I wish we would have got a little more for how dark the swamp we were going to pull the story through. I wish there would have been a little bit more to the differences in the three characters.
Well, the film opens up as if Matt has a dark secret, and then, you know, you watch the movie to find out what that dark secret is. Did any of that come through very clear for either of you two, what this dark secret even was?
No.
No.
So, yeah, I didn't think it did either based on this film. I didn't realize I led us into a dead end. I apologize. You were saying, Davey?
No, it's good that you have this perspective as someone who's read the book, because there's got to be something here. There has to be something in the bones of this movie that is more than train spotting but incompetent. Because at the end of the day, that's really the only thing that I got from this movie was, oh, it's doing train spotting, but trying to do it a little more modern, a little more current day, which is some of the most despicable and flat characters I've seen in a very long time. The performances are trying their best. Dean Charles Chapman especially is giving this role as much nuance as he possibly can, which is saying something because there is almost none in the writing. Anya Taylor-Joy is always great. Finn Cole as Joseph Kearney, who is just a sociopath, he's trying to give it charisma and balance, and they're just being fought every step of the way, it feels like, by the script and by the direction that is wanting, on one hand, this fun, wacky coming-of-age dramedy, and on the other hand, wanting to do a Requiem for a Dream type thing. And really nothing about this movie felt earned, especially when it goes, like you were saying, Robert, in the much darker and more upsetting places that it goes, especially in the last half of the movie. It feels like shock more than anything.
Yeah, that's what I mean by Matthew's character. I mean, I love the character of Kearney, like, story-wise. You know, you want people like these in the stories to see, but there's no pushback from Matthew until very late in the game. You know, so it's kind of just him, like, doing these little soliloquies to his friend, and his friend's never like, no, fuck that, man, I'm out of here. It's always like, all right, well, you know, give me another pill. So at that point, it just seems so almost solipsistic that it's just, I mean, I'm pretty sure I hadn't thought about it too much, but it wouldn't have been hard to guess where this was going. But I really don't like that they double down on Anya Taylor-Joy leaning into Matthew's character, telling him, look, don't go seek revenge for me because you want to feel better. And he's like, yeah, no, okay, I'm totally going to do that.
Yeah. And she's great as Jen.
Because
as well.
That's the only way it's the only way that this can end. It's
right.
When you set up everything that happens, it's the only thing that can possibly happen. And I'm sorry that we are giving away clues to where the conclusion of this movie goes. In case you can't tell, we do not recommend this movie. I think that's pretty fair to say. But you get to this point and it's not even cathartic. It is just good that should have happened 45 fucking minutes ago.
Yeah, probably the first time they saw.
Yeah, honestly.
Yeah, I seriously didn't really enjoy it all. The there's some extremely, I'd say, gimmicky slow motion through the fire and look at the camera stuff that absolutely not. They absolutely not did not need to have that in this film. I thought the scene in the quarry was, or whatever that was, I really liked a lot of it. I liked how much we're getting out of Kearney. I kind of like how he was repping his character up at the end, but holy hell, when we get this fucking, like, Mad Max RoboCop 2, three levels of fire from the other side of the property shit that, no, we don't need that, you know? The drama had already been raised. And so, but man, that look into the camera just, I was so upset.
It doesn't seem to make any of his decisions with intent. It seems to only go off of, oh, this would be cool, and that is fine, but if you're going to focus on, oh, wouldn't this be cool, you have to do it with serious matter that requires a less deft hand than this. This is Style Over Substance Abuse, the movie.
Right. And I want to say, oh, that was well done, because I've never abused a substance. I was on Vicodin once, and what's that really strong one they give you for, like, tremendous pain? I passed a kidney stone, and they gave me
Oxy.
Percocet. Yeah, I think it might have been Oxy. Like, really hard stuff.
Let me look at my bag real quick.
Anyways.
Let me call my friends from high school, see what they're selling nowadays. Yeah.
But after a while, I'm like, wait a second. Is this even a disillusioned, out-of-my-mind, fluffy cloud drug sequence I'm seeing? Or did one of these kids start a fire? I need more to this narrative than,
you know, I will say that I actually tracked back a little bit to see if we saw the fire before we saw it, but we didn't.
Okay. It must have been like a rage thing.
I was like, wow, this party must have looked way crazier at the beginning, but no, we didn't.
Because they were at a rave, and there's fire pits at a rave. What's the bonfires? That's what it's called. Bonfires. I'm not ancient. I remember when kids used to party on the beach. The quarry. What's really missing from this, I like what you said earlier, Robert. You knocked it out of the park with this message. Rez is such an amazing character in this novel. There's sadness, which we all get, we all share sometimes, and we even all deal with. And then there's clinical depression, which Rez has in spades. And I've never seen, or rather read, a book that helped explain that to people such as myself who haven't suffered from it. And it's stupid to say, but it's gorgeous prose on explaining how this boy becoming a man is feeling. And that not being in the movie at all really bummed me out. Like, cutting out the heart of this film, man.
I was so surprised because we see what happens with his character, and then we get the very stern, no, I don't need any of you. And again, we get Kearney coming to visit him, talking about, hey, you know, if you need help. But then legit, it's like, you want to go party? All right, cool.
Well, yeah, there's none of the... there's none of the contradictions or complications that you can clearly see are missing here that I can't help but presume would make a novel about these characters and with these themes totally work. All I'm seeing is, as someone who is close enough in age range to these characters, I'm just being told that my life is fucking worthless and that I am a despicable human being. And that honestly, I would probably be better off just crawling into a hole and dying, which, why make a movie about it then?
At least not without
just
some
make
triumph,
a PSA.
Right? What about the triumph?
Yeah, just make a PSA called Kill Your Children.
And it could have that Hell is for Children.
And I will say for people that are watching or listening that have seen the film, that's, you know, I've got some, you know, I did like this stuff. I think that's what's kind of the frustration in our voices. The actors were great. The film looks really good. You can tell from the story that there's stuff we're not getting. So I think that's what was, I don't know if heartbreaking is the right word, but that's what was really lacking for me, is that you could tell that there is more there. And it just, like Brad's saying, it doesn't, having read the book, you know, you see that patchwork, but it not making it to the screen just kind of defeats the girth that this is trying to get underneath the wild stuff that we see in the narrative.
What did you guys think about Kearney going to America and then I think 2 minutes later being back from America?
I did actually go back in that too, because I was like, wait, did he leave yesterday? And I was like, okay, I guess we get a time jump, but stylistically we'll just jump forward. But it was a little fast. I did, like, as soon as he came back, the next two t-shirts we see him wear say New York on it. It was pretty cool.
It was supposed to go to Boston.
The movie has also a really big problem with perspective, because it's ostensibly from Matt's perspective, but in doing, especially with the flashbacks, or not flashbacks, but the flash sides to America with the game show and everything, it's, at least for me, it started kind of running in my head of, oh, is this how Matt sees him, or is this how he's seeing himself? Is this how the audience is supposed to see him? What is being communicated to us? And even when those scenes are interesting, because a lot of them really are, especially near the beginning when you're like, oh, what's going on with this game show motif? It's cool, but there's never the point where we are told with really any clarity what that is supposed to mean and how to interpret it. And if you're going to be that vague, you have to be a better movie.
Yeah, cheers.
At least I think so.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but sure. I thought, like I said, I thought the device was neat. It was jarring, you know, visually, which is neat because you know, oh, well, what is this? And then, like you said, I think I said earlier, kind of felt to me like what we're supposed to see this as, this media mirror of society, of the world that they're living in, and how hyper-violent, and celebrities, and blah, 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 blah. So something like that. But like you said, it does kind of get real personal and then kind of be kind of, you know, real macro with the other character, talking about this is what men is, and this is all this stuff, and a little great little probably first horrible reference to our former president that, like I said, comes off kind of apt. I mean, you know, if I had to pick a bit,
take place in 2003 is what's so funny about that.
Wow. Yeah.
I believe the movie points that out also just briefly at the beginning, 2003, and then 3 months earlier. Anyways,
if they say 2003, it's really quick. It's like so quick, yeah, that I did not have the patience to go back and look for it. So I just was kind of guessing. I was like, this is probably sometime mid to late 2000s. Yeah. And I was close enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. Robert, do you want to start just taking us into the final thoughts? Because I feel like we could bitch about this for hours.
For sure. I dug the meat of this movie, which was the actors, the supporting cast that was kind of familiar. Conlith Hill, Ralph Ensign, you know, are great little bits we get in there. I could have done with, you know, for some reason, Rez is the only family we didn't meet, mother or father, and maybe that was a thing in the book. I think what I wanted more from this movie is what it feels like you can tell was left out. I really do like the way the movie is shot. There's some really neat tracking shots. There was a really neat slow zoom. I could have done without some of the gimmickier stuff we were talking about. But I'm definitely going to give this a 5 out of 10. Don't take drugs, you know, until your brain's fully formed, at least hardcore ones. Because no film that plays slow dive during the movie will get anything lower than a 5 for me. So on that strength alone, I'm going to give it a 5.
All right, Brad?
Well, as an avid reader, no, I read this because I am fascinated by Irish authors ever since Patrick McCabe's Butcher Boy a lifetime ago. And they all come off a bit sad, but there's so much truth in that reality these authors share. I hate to genre type an author by where they're from, but there it is. Sorry.
It's the Catholic guilt. It just stems down.
So this film, I feel like I'm being super unfair because I was mad already at how different it was. They cut out an entire boy. They had a fourth wheel named Cochner.
What?
That isn't even in the movie. Jen, who is a side character in this novel, even her parts are kind of trimmed. She has such genuine conversations with all these boys, and her and Rez especially, though it's brief, she sees him and wants her to know he's okay, even though he doesn't believe that, and she wants him to know it's okay if you're not, and things like that. Not making it into this film really pissed me off, because I loved that narrative from Rez. I do think the men, the young men, Dean Charles Chapman and Finn Cole as Matt and Kearney, their chemistry together of the I'm terrified of this man, or this boy, I should say, but I'm afraid that if I don't do what he says, something's going to happen to me. And Kearney, who everyone's terrified to be around, is like, I'm a legend, even though nobody sees you that way, man. Nobody sees you that way. You're a menace, and they're afraid of you. It's hilarious. So, yeah, Rez wants everyone to see who he really is. Kearney wants everyone to see him as a legend, and Matthew doesn't want to be seen at all. And I just don't think the film measures up to that narrative, but it tries. I'd never watch this again. I can't even say I'd recommend it. I'm going to give this 4 spliffs at 10 raves in a quarry.
Very nice. Real quick, would you recommend the book?
It's got a lot of hyper-violence in it, like disturbing, especially from Kearney's point of view. Like, he'll just go into imagining killing people very violently. And I do think the actor was able to capture that type of behavior with the eyes and the reactions to violence. I would, but just be warned, it's not pleasant in those chapters.
Copy that. Dankeschön. So, yeah, I'm with y'all. This movie got under my skin immediately because it opens with Loaded by Primal Scream, which is a great song that also opens The World's End. And so, knowing that this was a movie about European teenagers causing mischief and it going poorly, and comparing it to the best movie about European men looking back on their teenager years when they were acting poorly, I was like, all right, if you're going to open it with maybe the same opening as the best Edgar Wright movie, quite possibly, not my favorite, but maybe the best, you have some really big shoes to fill. And it just disappointed almost every single step of the way outside of the performances, which, again, are by really talented people that are trying their hardest to give this some nuance. It feels like all of the actors read the book for research and the director didn't. And that's such a weird feeling. And I feel pretty comfortable saying that without having read the book, because they are giving it so much more emotion and so much more. They're giving it so much more power than is given to them by the scripts and by the decisions made on a creative above the line front. It looks good. There are moments of it where it hits perfectly. There's a scene with a homeless man that is just A+ level tension and confusion. And it's always so close to hitting the mark, and it never really does. The opening of the movie says, just what is it that you want to do? We want to be free. We want to be free to do what we want to do. And we want to get loaded. And we want to have a good time. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to have a good time. We're going to have a party. Just have a party and don't make a movie, if that's all you want to do. Because I don't know if this movie is smart enough to use that clip ironically. I'm going to give this 4 old men yelling at 10 clouds about the youths today.
I will say it was a little darker than I thought it was going to be, being named after a Joy Division song, but